Thank you. You know, what is it that differentiates one newspaper from another? You know, they mostly subscribe to the same general wire services. The sports page, the comic strips, they're pretty similar. However, there are some characteristics that are unique for every newspaper, and that is the local columnist. And our speaker today has been providing that service for the Santa Rosa Press Democrat for a long time. He got his degree from San Jose State in journalism, and then he's been writing for the Press Democrat since 1977. That's 34 years. And then in 2001, he took over as a full-time columnist when Gay LeBaron retired. How about it, though, if you look in this morning's PD, there is our speaker's column. Right next to it is a column by Gay LeBaron. I'll put in a plug for her column. She has quite a lengthy discussion of the story about that bridge across Spring Lake. Our speaker's wife is Diane Peterson. She's a writer on food and the symphony, and we always enjoy her reviews of the Santa Rosa Symphony concerts. And so it gives me great pleasure to present Chris Smith speaking on the subject, Short Stories Can Be Great Too. Chris.
Thank you. Well, that was already a hard act to follow. Thank you for having me here today. And I don't want you to feel too sorry for me, but I swear, these two fingers, I don't know if you can tell they're swollen. The significance of that is one of the last times I was in Oakmont, I came and I did a story on that, the Wii Bowling Tournament, which is great fun. And they gave me a shirt, which then I just realized, of course, I should have worn that shirt today. I have my bowling shirt from the Oakmont Bowling League. But I went bowling last night with my 20-year-old son for the first time in years. I can't believe we're on the seventh frame. I can hardly move these fingers. So I'll have to take the week off. And I'm not going to say anything about getting old, but it's happening. I thought I'd start by asking how many folks are still paying for a subscription to the Press Democrat? Oh, that's wonderful. Oh my gosh. I didn't expect that. I was going to say that I was going to come around and hug you each and give you each a certificate for $5 off at Domino's, but there's too many. Instead, and I know that I could launch right into a discussion of the current challenges of the daily newspaper, but I think you've already been there. And given that you are readers of the newspaper, you're probably very well aware of the struggles of daily newspapers as our business model has changed so dramatically. But I'm not going to go there. Instead, I thought I would talk a little bit today about the big role of little stories. Before I start, though, I think I need to acknowledge that while I'm going to talk about my love of the little stories, I have to acknowledge the importance of the big national and momentous stories, and I know our hearts are all broken this morning about this shooting, and this senseless, unbelievable, pointless shooting in Tucson. And I just wanted to acknowledge that, though I like to talk about the funny little heartwarming stories, these kinds of stories are the meat and potatoes, and I know our hearts are all broken this morning from what happened in Tucson. I've been writing stories, the short stories now since 2011, today is 2011. Well, I got this column, yes, in 2002. Gay LeBaron retired in 2001, semi-retired, and as Judd mentioned, thank God, she's only partially retired. She's semi-retired. She's still writing. But I'd been at the Press Democrat since 1978. actually 1977, I became a correspondent there, and I thought I would mention the serendipity that got me into the Press Democrat. I did go to San Jose State, and then as a junior and then as a graduate, I went to my hometown newspaper, the Riverside Press Enterprise, as an intern. And I was working as an intern there. I was out of school, had graduated in June of 1976. And that fall, my girlfriend was still at San Jose State, and I drove up one weekend from Riverside to spend the weekend. And we drove up here. I think it was only the second or third time that I had been in Sonoma County. And we had breakfast at the Pine Cone Cafe in Sebastopol. And some of you will know the kicker to the story I'm about to tell, but here I'm in Sonoma County. I'm quite enchanted by all that Sonoma County was, the beauty of it. And of course, it was even more rural then, in 1976. We're having breakfast at the Pine Cone Cafe in Sebastopol, and the plates start to jiggle in the water. And here comes a train right up the middle of Main Street. Anybody recall that? It was astounding. I thought, I've never seen such a thing. I thought, I loved it before, but I even loved it more now. I thought, this place, so could have this huge freight train come right smack up the middle of Main Street. So from there, we went out to Bodega Bay and enjoyed seeing where the birds had been shot. That was a big deal for somebody from Southern California. And then we started up Highway 1, and I don't think we knew where we were going or what we were getting into heading on up north of Jenner. But we're driving, and actually it was her fault that we stopped. She had to use the restroom. So she went into, I think, that Chevron. We got into Wallala, and there again, has everybody been to Wallala? If you haven't, you got to go. What an enchanting town. And here again, coming from Riverside in 1976 and stumbling upon Wallala, driving across the Wallala River into that sweet little town. So my girlfriend went into the restroom, and I look over on the ocean side. There's the Surf Supermarket. Now there's a new one on the east side of the highway. But there's a grocery store and a few little shops. And here's a building that says Independent Coast Observer. Yeah, it's a newspaper, and the door was open. Even though it was a Saturday, the door was open, and this little shop is sitting right over the bluff where the Wallala River flows into the ocean. So I went in, I started talking to the lady, and she was just an employee, she's not the owner, but we talked about the ICO and how a woman from the Sea Ranch publishes it, and it covers from about Fort Ross to maybe Manchester or Elk. And I said to her, do you think you'd ever need a reporter? And she said, our only reporter quit last week. It's great. Our only reporter quit last week. So here I am. I'm 23 years old. I've got my degree in journalism. I've got some daily experience in my pocket from the Riverside Press Enterprise. And I was very interested. And actually, I have to tell you, I went to the car, and my girlfriend and I think we turned around there. We got senses, and I mentioned what had just happened, and the tears came to her eyes. Like we're no longer together. She's better off without me. But the tears did come, and she said, "I would go anywhere with you, but I'm not going to Wallala." So, I'm glad we got that out. But I did. And, you know, the people at the Press Enterprise were telling me this isn't the smartest thing. You know, here I did not have a staff position, but I had a paid internship at the Riverside Press Enterprise. And I was working at night, and I was running out to fires, and I was writing cut lines for photographs. And those good old days, that newspaper had a morning and an afternoon issue in addition. So it was a real newspaper. The Riverside Press Enterprise had won a Pulitzer Prize years before. But, and I told him I'm moving to Wallala. You can imagine. Where is that? But I did get, I did go up there and I started writing out and taking pictures for the Independent Coast Observer. And then one good thing was I realized 4 or 5 months into it that I was losing weight. And then slowly after that, I realized I was starving. That is a, it was a great newspaper. It was a great experience living up there, but no money. And the owners of the Independent Coast Observer would like to have kept me on, and they would like to pay more. There just wasn't any more money. And I'm 23, 24 years old, and I've got to get a real job. And I'm thinking, how do you get noticed? How do you get a real job in newspapers from the Independent Coast Observer? And one day, a former employee of that little newspaper asked me if I'd seen the ad in the Press Democrat. I said, no, I didn't. What ad are you speaking of? And in those days, you may recall, the Press Democrat had correspondents all around Lake Mendocino and Sonoma County, Bodega and Lakeport, and these were folks who wrote. They were paid only about $550 a month to write news for the Press Democrat, but they needed one in Fort Bragg. And lo and behold, I was not making $550 a month at the Independent Coast Observer. So I applied for that job to be the correspondent for the Fort Bragg Mendocino area of Mendocino for the Press Democrat, and I got that job in that was in late '77. And then fortunately, they invited me to join the staff in 1978. So since then, I have done general news. I've done the story of the day, what's going on. You know, I never was much of a beat reporter. I never covered the Board of Supervisors other than fill in. I did do police reporting, which was very interesting. But most of the time, I've been kind of a utility infielder at the Press Democrat. You know, what's the story of the day? Run out and get it. And I've always kind of specialized in people stories. So when Gay retired, actually I left the PD. I thought I'd wanted to try something else. I got it in my head that I wanted to change. And so I went to work for Memorial Hospital in 1989. I might be messing that up. Anyway, at some point I went to work for Memorial Hospital a long time ago, and I did brain surgery. I remember seeing you there. You assisted me on No, I worked down in the basement and put out the newsletter and dealt with the press, which was a very, that's a whole other story, but it's very interesting to be a journalist and then go into, you know, basically public relations or being a spokesman and dealing with the press. And it was very, very interesting. I mean, one little, I hadn't intended to go this way, but it was very interesting. The hospital, Memorial back then, had this problem with blood waste showing up at the county dump. And it's a real uh-oh. And so the county started watching when the garbage came in from Memorial Hospital. They took it to the side and went through it, because the blood waste is supposed to go to an entirely different place, obviously, for entirely different handling. And so the county's going through Memorial's waste, and lo and behold, they keep finding maybe just one red bag. Somebody somewhere in that hospital, for who knows what reason, would put like just one red bag in the regular garbage. And, you know, so suddenly that load of garbage is going to cost the hospital $25,000 because of the special handling and all. So a reporter came up from Channel 5, and he was just the nicest guy, and it must be a slow news day. I don't know why they're having me do this story. Aw, shucks, you know, it's nothing. And I went through, I said, you know, this is an accident, and we're going to get to the bottom of it, but there's no reason for anybody to do this. Nobody is saving any money by putting that one bag in there. Well, I don't know why it's happening, but we're going to find it, and we're very concerned about this. We'll get to the bottom of it. He says, yeah, that's fine. So I go on the news. I watched the news that night, of course, because I'm going to be on it. And it comes on, and the teaser says, hospitals are in the business of saving lives. But in Sonoma County, a hospital is jeopardizing its community with the threat of AIDS by putting blood waste in the garbage. And it was just such an entirely different tone that he and I had, you know. So it was very interesting being on the other side. The other very interesting, my second most interesting day at Memorial Hospital as a spokesman for Memorial Hospital was when Sheriff Idy was in with heart trouble. And the word comes down from the president of Memorial Hospital. The sheriff is here, no one is to know. I said, well, if the Press Democrat calls and asks me if he's here, what do I say? I say, no comment. And I said, oh, they'll never guess that he's actually here. You know? But I was so happy when the day ended without any calls from the Press Democrat. It's just very strange here, too. You know, as a reporter, you know, my instinct was kind of to call the Press Democrat and tip him that the sheriff was there, but I couldn't do that. At any rate, in 2002, I did get this column, and so the big change for me was I have always written too long. My very first story I wrote for an English teacher, my beloved English teacher, who I credit with my being here, because she encouraged me to write, gave me my very first newspaper or journalism assignment was to write a news story based on a fairy tale. So I picked Cinderella, and I wrote this story about Cinderella as a news story. And she told me that she read it to classes for a few years, but I think that by the time she got done reading it, half the class was asleep because she said she liked the story, but it was way too long. And I had to deal with that. You know, as a young reporter, I find that, you know, you go and you interview someone, you write a story, and everything is so important. Every word is golden. Every word has to be included. You couldn't possibly cut one of these words. But they didn't. They didn't cut words. They cut, like, half the story because it has to fit. Well, now, the challenge of writing these little tiny stories try to carry on the tradition of Gay LeBaron and Herb Cain. And believe me, I don't make a habit of mentioning Gay LeBaron and Herb Cain and myself in the same sentence, but they are my inspiration. And I found that the challenge of taking the story and writing it in just two or three paragraphs is an interesting challenge. Back for when I got the column, before Gay retired, they had hired Chris Corsi as their first, Metro columnist. And Chris and I think that was a wonderful period for me to have Chris run one day and me run the next day, because Chris was more the typical kind of edgy, more political essayist, and then I had my little happy stories, and I thought it was a nice balance. And I was happy for Chris and happy for the Smart Rail District when he went to work for them, but I'm kind of sorry for myself. I feel like kind of a one-armed man without Chris Corsi. I need to mention also that you may have seen that Chris Corsi's wife passed away just 1 week ago. She was a very close friend. The service on Friday was beautiful, and I know that all of our thoughts go to Chris Corsi. He's a wonderful man. So I got the column, and then as a columnist, the big deal is they tell you have to find your voice. And that's true, because as a reporter, you're just writing the facts, but as a columnist, you need a subjective voice. And so I have, I wouldn't say struggled, but I've had to try to define my voice. And one thing I found pretty early on is that I'm not good at opinion. And that is not a particularly good thing for a columnist, really, because I think columnists are supposed to have opinions. But with my composition, I just find that I really don't fundamentally feel that when there's a public issue out there, that unless I have spent a lot of time on it or someone's given me some very pertinent, powerful information, I just don't have the confidence that my opinion about what the city council should do about this or that, or what the board of supervisors should do, or whether a certain city council person is an idiot for doing this or that, I just don't have the confidence to say, well, this is what I think. Who am I? You know, I haven't sat and studied this issue in a scholarly way. I've read about it, and I can pop up with an opinion and throw it in the newspaper, but what value is it? And so often I have to say that if I did float an opinion about an issue, often enough, people would come and they'd write and they'd call me and they'd say, what about this and this and this? And I have to say, well, gee, you know, those are good points. Maybe I really didn't have it right, you know. So I just try to stay away from the opinions. And as the column has evolved, to the degree it has evolved, is that I have discovered that really I just love the story. I love people's stories, the type of stories that I think people might be sharing as they're having coffee or meeting for lunch. This is the thing that happened to my neighbor. My daughter got chosen for American Idol, whatever, that kind of thing. I just like to relate the stories. But I have had to reflect some on how substantial does a story need to be to rise to the status of a news story. Some of the things I write, I have to admit that if I were to go to an editor and say, I'm going to write a story about a 10-year-old girl named Zoe Valerie who a year or two ago set up a lemonade stand in front of her yard because she wanted to raise some money to help save the Rose Parade. She'd read that the Rose Parade was in trouble, and one of your neighbors, Mr. Trione, was one of the people who came to the rescue of that. But this little girl named Zoe read in the Press Democrat that the Rose Parade, after more than 100, well over 100 years, was in jeopardy because of the funding. And so she set up a lemonade stand during one parade, and she donated all the proceeds. It's only about $10. But it was a pretty sweet thing. And now, is that news? And if I were to go say to an editor, hey, I think I'm going to write an item about, or a story about this little 10-year-old girl who set up a lemonade stand. Well, I can just kind of imagine the eyes rolling back in their head. So what is news? I've thought often that if there's a motorcycle accident in Sonoma County, and I want to say I'm not going to suggest that it is not news, and maybe some people here have even lost someone to a motorcycle accident. But I've read so many motorcycle accidents in the Press Democrat. So someone from Sacramento or Oakland rides up here on a Sunday and unfortunately and tragically has a motorcycle accident, is perhaps killed. Well, that absolutely, positively will appear in tomorrow's newspaper, even though none of us knew this person. And there's really nothing that anybody can do about it. It happened. We didn't know him. There probably may be no lessons to derive from it unless maybe they can prove that the road was unsafe or his safety equipment was inadequate. But probably, even though we continue day after day to run such stories, in my mind, I'm not sure what the real substantive significance of a motorcycle accident is, but yet we will cover that every time. Whereas for me, to write a story, a few lines about Zoe putting up this lemonade stand, well, one, it's heartening, and two, it lets you know that it reminds you that the Rose Parade is in peril, and that perhaps, so now you know that, and if you choose, you might decide to go on the Rose Parade site and donate $5 yourself. So there is something you can do about it. It's a story that opens up an opportunity. So I guess I'm saying that I kind of had to justify to myself for a while that these little stories have value, even if they don't have what is journalistically considered news value. So I've started, what I write more and more of these stories that I don't trouble myself with whether they have intrinsic news value. I think they have community value and human value. And sometimes there actually is a response. I let people know that something's going on and maybe there's an opportunity for a response, whether it's for you to just come and attend. I did write today about Guy Fieri coming to town. He's going to show, they're going to do a preview of his Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives because he featured this wonderful Worth Our Weight Cafe, which is a fabulous thing. Well, I wrote about that, so at least it opens the opportunity that you could go. So sometimes there is a response. Recently, I drove by the site of the new Sutter Hospital, where it's going up, and I noticed this barn that was sitting there. And I don't think I'd ever really paid much attention. It wasn't so obvious when there was still vegetation on that site that's now cleared for the hospital. And I noticed that there was this barn, and I wondered what was going to happen to it, and I made some calls, and I found that the people up at Tierra Vegetables, a farm that's up the next exit, or two more exits up at Airport Boulevard, they have a farm, they would like to move that barn. Well, but it might cost $200,000. They were envisioning lifting that white barn up, putting on a trailer, and taking it up the highway, having to lift the power lines and the whole thing. They said it could cost $200,000 to move that barn. And I just mentioned that. You know, it's, by the way, in case you were driving by and happened to notice that there's this barn where the Sutter Hospital is going to go, this is what's going on. These farmers would like to move it, but it's going to cost a tremendous amount of money and may not be at all possible. Well, there was a construction company in Sebastopol read that and gave them a call and said, we could do it. We could move that barn for half that amount by dismantling it, taking it up on flat beds and reconstructing it. And that has happened. So I feel pretty good about that, that I had a little part. I mean, life would have continued if they'd burned the barn. But it's all the better that it's going to, because it could become a community asset. These folks up at TR Vegetables are hoping to turn this barn into another community gathering place, classes, events. It could be a nice thing.
I found it of interest.
Oh, good. Well, thank you. I'll take that. We brain surgeons think alike. I did a little story of a lady called me, and I've done this kind of thing. I don't write all just happy stories. There's a sad thing that happens, and I don't know if it happens out here, but people will come and pick all the persimmons off your tree. Or they'll come and you have a dogwood. You'll come up in the morning and your dogwood has been completely fleeced. And presumably somebody's taking this fruit or vegetation and probably selling it. So, and it's a sad thing. So a lady wrote or called me from the Town and Country neighborhood and said, it's just unbelievable. And it's happened before, but she goes out and her front yard persimmon tree has been actually stripped to the left. They didn't leave her one persimmon. Come in the morning, they took every single one. So I bemoaned that, and I always try to make it somewhat, you know, like hope that we're evolving, hope that people will stop doing this, you know, hope that they'll be caught and hanged. That's some positive outcome, you know? I got a nice email from a lady and said, I have some persimmons, and if you would, I'd like to get in touch with that lady, and I would like to offer her some persimmons. And that happened. And that was just very, very sweet. There was that outcome. It's been a couple of years, but I wrote an item about this wonderful equestrian center in Petaluma called Giant Steps, and they have children in who have all a number of physical and mental and health challenges and have these remarkable encounters with horses. Children who are non-communicative and frightful get on and they feel the comfort of this horse. They're no longer afraid. And it's just a beautiful moment. And these children come out and they feel better. And they feel better about themselves. And they mentioned, the fellow Robert Pope mentioned to me that they were looking for a new home. And I just put that out there. I don't overtly say, if you'd like to help these people or give them a ranch, you know, they'd appreciate it, but that'd be okay. But I just mentioned that it's happening, and they got a call. This wonderful woman, Gladys, I'm a little behind myself. I want to find her name. well, I'm not finding, I'll come back to it, but there's a woman who is managing the estate for, I've got to find the name. You, probably somebody could tell me what the name, the fellow who, he'd been a car dealer in this tent. G.K. Hart, thank you. And Gladys is administering his trust, and she saw the item, and she called him up, and they spoke, and then she spoke to her friends in the trust department at the Exchange Bank, and they went down there, and they presented Giant Steps with $400,000. And that was an awful nice thing, you know. So it's just the workings of community, you know. Things can happen, people can respond and interact and attend and participate if they know what's going on. And more, unfortunately, as the newspaper shrinks, that kind of community news is harder to get in. I don't know if you've ever had the experience of trying to get a press release into the Press Democrat, but it's not easy anymore. And so the opportunities for this kind of community news are more limited, and so I'm happy to just include it with mine. Each time I try to make a story out of it. When people call and they say, we're having this event, and we'd really like for you to get it in your column, I say, well, let's talk about it. Is there something interesting about it? So actually, like, whether it worked or not, when the people at Worth Our Weight told me about Guy Fieri, I said, well, I asked some questions, and I thought it was a nice angle that it was his parents who are supporters. They go weekly to Worth Our Weight Cafe. It was Guy Fieri's parents who took him there, and he was astounded, and he was impressed by the students, and so that connection was made. So that made it more of a story rather than just saying, you know, a week from Sunday there's going to be this event. So I always try, if people call and they're trying to get something into the PD, well, let's talk, is there a story in there? I wrote not too long ago, there's been a fair amount in the Press Democrat by now, but remarkably, the theater students at two local high schools, Montgomery High and Elsie Allen High, have been selected to go to Scotland for the world's largest arts festival, too. It's an amazing honor for these students. And I wrote about the girls at Elsie Allen High School, all Hispanic girls, and, you know, whose parents have kind of limited, generally, expectations for them. And here they're going to go to Scotland. They're writing plays. And I got two or three days after that story ran, I answered the phone. It's an older lady with this wonderful Scottish brogue. She was from Edinburgh, and she said she would like to pay their airfare to Scotland, which I thought was pretty sweet. Also, the pasta king, Art of Bledo, is going to put on a dinner for them as a benefit. One story I wrote about, you might have read, right down the street here, folks, the Yates put up a scarecrow for, they put up with a pumpkin head, and they give them a different theme each year, and this year it was the Tea Party, and it was a very playful thing. They had him hold up a sign, like, you know, they put tea bags on his tri-corner hat, and then they had him holding a little sign. It was smaller than this. And let's see, I recall that it said, actually I don't recall, that's why I'm reading it. Oh, it said, so his little sign said, shrink government, but keep my Social Security checks coming. And I drove by and saw it. I thought it was very charming. Well, apparently somebody didn't think it was funny and reported it to the OVA, and there was a determination made by somebody at probably not a very high level that the sign was in violation and needed to come down right now. So they took the sign down, and they weren't very happy about it. And actually, so they staged a little protest. They put a sock in the pumpkin's mouth and taped it. So now, before it was just kind of fun, now it is a statement. And I got a call from a very nice lady who's the very nice sounding lady who's, I guess, the new manager of the OVA. And she said she was over there, and she pleaded with them to please restore their scarecrow to its original condition. So sometimes it works. I like to write about random acts of kindness, generosity, and humanity because I think they're real, they're worth knowing about, and they tend to get less press than acts that produced by our darker side, such as the news filling the front pages this morning. I had a little story this morning about it at Super Burger. A woman came in, had her lunch, and then, you know, it's just like a remarkable thing. She looked around. She must have probably known when she was going in there she was going to do it. I'm not sure. But she spoke with her young waitress and said she'd like to do something. Please don't say anything about it. And she handed her $240 in cash to treat everybody at Super Burger on the first day of the year to their lunch. It's just a simple but sweet thing. Now, and I don't write about that kind of thing every time it happens. And yet, I think that once in a while, it's kind of a nice thing to acknowledge that people are doing that. And I have to say, I was in Hawaii. I did write a couple of stories. I went with two of our local Pearl Harbor veterans to Honolulu, to Pearl Harbor, for December 7th. And it was a remarkable thing being there with these vets and seeing the respect that they were shown. See people come up and thank them on the street. We were at the hotel where the National Convention of the Pearl Harbor Survivors Association was held. And I'm standing with Herb Loudon. He's 93 years old. He lives in Petaluma. And he's the national chaplain of the Pearl Harbor Survivors Association and a wonderful man. And I was standing there with him, and this boy about this tall walked up to him and just looked him in the eye and went, and I'm just busting up. But it's very sweet being there, knowing that this will be the last time that the survivors of Pearl Harbor meet at Pearl Harbor. And I had my evenings to myself. It's one good thing about going to Hawaii with people who are 93. Yeah. You get some free time. But they do get up early. But I was walking down Waikiki, and I was looking for a place to eat, and I saw on a side street a nice little sushi restaurant, and I went in and sat at the bar, the sushi bar, of course. And I would never write about this, but I just mentioned that there was a group of young people over at this table, and I was aware of their conversation. They all seemed to be exchange students. There were different languages coming from this group, like six of them. And particularly for one young woman, that it seemed to be, this is so expensive, what could I eat? It's so expensive. And just because I think I'd been aware of these things happening, because I write about it, when I left, I just left some money for them. And I felt really good about it, you know, and I did it anonymously. But I just thought, here, they need it more than I do, you know, and they're just kids trying to have a dinner. But I think I wouldn't have, if I hadn't read about it in my own column, I wouldn't have known that people did that kind of thing. Some of the stories that I like best really do not have a solicitation, a need to be filled, or acknowledge someone for a kind act. They're just great stories. I hadn't had this column a week, I don't think, when I had a story about a lady who was, it was in wintertime, about like this, and her downspouts, her rain gutters, were blocked. And she might have lived in Oakmont. Let's say she did, just for the sake of, she's up there clearing it. She's up there, there's standing water in her gutters. So she gets up and she clears the leaves and debris from the gutter, and the water starts to flow. And it's rushing out on the downspout onto her concrete patio, and out flies a live fish. And it's flopping around, and she's... She rescued it, and we finally, you know, she figured out that the neighbors have a pond, and that the, what is it, storks, what kind of birds would do that? The egret must have dropped it, on, you know, took off and dropped it on her roof, and it rolled right down into her gutter where there was water. It was an amazing thing. She almost hated to eat that fish. And then I did write, actually I wrote a column and then an item and a column about the lawns. Are the lawns here today? No. This is just a sweet story that one day these folks live just right down the road and their phone rang early one morning and it's a lady calling from Hamilton, Ohio to the home of Carl and Wendy LaLonde. Oakmont, California. Cal, yeah. And she had spent a couple of years on and off looking for someone related to this little treasure trove of papers and photos and documents that she had found, it's like 2 or 3 years earlier, in an old dresser. She works for a social service agency that serves disabled people. But so somebody had donated this old furniture. Here's the furniture. You can sell it, keep the money, help the people. So she opens it up, and in some drawers there's just trash, but then in one drawer, here's photographs. Here are actual immigration docs, citizenship documents, photos, and then menus and other papers related to something called the poodle dog. The Poodle Dog Restaurant in San Francisco. So she's called, and then she sees this name, LaLonde. And so with the internet now, that's a whole other story. It's amazing the people that people are finding on the internet. It's astounding. I would have to say that's probably one of the best things about the internet. You know, there's so many terrible things happening, but to go out and actually to be able to find another human being that you're looking for that you never would have found before, and now you can find him in an afternoon. But anyway, she calls it, is this Mr. LaLonde? Do you know anything about the poodle dog? Well, yeah, that was his family. This was his mother's papers. He has no idea how they got into a drawer, of a dresser of a drawer, no, you know what I mean, in Hamilton, Ohio. And then he figured that she was going to charge him. Well, yes, I would love to have him. What's that going to cost me? And she said, it's not going to cost you a dime. These things belong to you. I want you to have them. And I sat there at their table here in Oakmont. He's going through looking at these and learning about his family and remembering these names and just reliving so much that came from this really amazing treasure house. And now one outcome of that, treasure trove, I meant to say, outcome of that was that he heard from a lot of people. They saw his name, and he heard from a lot of people that he hadn't heard from for years. So there again, it helps, you know, keep connections alive. So these stories, I would hope that there may not be all that much to each individual story, but I hope that as people read them, they get something out of it, and it certainly... it's making them feel a little better than the story about the accident, the motorcycle accident. My hope, I write these tidbits. They appear in the paper on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. And my hope is that they might strengthen the fabric of our community, help readers feel more a part of our community as they read about themselves and their neighbors in the paper. Hope it might prompt the occasional chuckle or tear, and it might temper the impression left by much of what else is in the newspaper. It leaves an impression that there's nothing good in the world, because there truly is a lot of good in the world, but it is true that the good doesn't get the press that the other gets. I mean, I just always often think about that too. If I'm writing about something that happened to the 98% of the people who will get up this morning and will will live their lives in an honorable way and be productive and be good to their children and be good to their neighbors, you know, and might do something funny, worthwhile, might commit a random act of kindness, I think that's fine, because the 1% who are going to go out and do something hideous, we know they're going to get the press. And I do think it's only fair and it's more enlivening to give a little bit of press to the others. For this new year, I do think I need to get a little more political. It's not my nature, but if I can cover it, sort of like Herb Cain did, without taking sides. That's the one thing with political stuff, you tend to start taking sides, and I don't want to take sides, because I do think that everybody has value, and I may not agree, but I don't want to get, I don't want to be known as the columnist who sides with any one faction. But I would like to be, I would like to write in an illuminating way about things that go on politically. It's just that it's one more thing that takes time, and it's like I'd love to get to more city council meetings, but it's just tough to get there. But that's one of my New Year's resolutions, is to pay a little more attention to the political scene. Other than that, I am just enough of a newsman to hope that this year I might break or get a piece of one of the big stories of the year. I do care about the big stories, but mostly I vow that I will write more of the little ones, and I will hope that they'll be a little funnier this year. They'll be better written, and they will continue to be in some way important to Sonoma County. So I do think that sometimes less is more. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have about thinking.
I'll remind you, if you have a question, raise your hand, and I'll give you the microphone. I really have to do this.
Oh.
And I'm really standing up.
Yeah. I could tell.
You know, when you talked about attributing a lot of this to Herb Cain, indeed, when we were living in Monterey County, my wife would get little episodes. I recall her sending one in about, he'd talk about bank robberies, and she mentioned something about a man holding up a bank with a banana. Sort of thing.
Right.
And I certainly hope you can sustain your resolutions. I know how resolutions made on New Year's Day fade very, very quickly. But
yes,
I am a constant reader, and I really appreciate what you've done.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I can tell you, I did get my name in Herb Cain's column once. I was so excited. Oh, my gosh. And I picked up, because it was, I don't know how he got it, but I think Gorbachev or a Russian Soviet official was visiting San Francisco, and I had written a story that said that it was at the Fairmont, the luncheon at the Fairmont Hotel had put on the menu that they were serving Sonoma lamb. And then my lead had been, but that the person who owns the title, owns that name, owns Sonoma lamb, said it's a bunch of bull. So, because it wasn't his lamb. And boy, I've got that Herb Cain item in my office. So that was a big day. Yes.
Hi, Chris. My name is Star Power, and I have sent a couple of stories into you, both of which you printed up and made fun of my name, by the way.
Star Power.
No, you didn't. Yeah. You didn't make fun of it. Well. But my question is, do you get most of your leads from your emails, from your fans?
I would say mostly emails, yes. Yes, and then phone calls. You know, I think Gay, in her time, got a lot of letters. She still gets lovely letters. I occasionally, and actually I'll tell you that if I get a letter, it's probably from someone who is 65 or older, and I appreciate that. But I would say yes. Emails is probably number one, because it is so blessedly easy to send an email. And I do, with my job, I'm not crazy about every aspect of modern technology, I have some concerns, like we all do, about our increasingly electronic and virtual lives. However, email is an amazing thing, because people who would not go to the trouble to write it down, a story, and maybe not even pick up the phone, will, from their BlackBerry, say, hey, this just happened. And I love that. And actually, one nice thing that happens is often if something happens, sometimes it's not the person who did it or to whom it happened who calls or writes me. It's one or two people removed. They say, hey, my neighbors, they probably wouldn't call you, but I want you to know this happened. Like, it was a neighbor who sent me a photograph of the house over in the coffee, two houses over in the Coffee Lane area, that at Christmas, one house is gloriously lit up, probably $300 PG&E bill, just glorious lights. And then their neighbors over here, on their above their garage, put an arrow and the word ditto. And that's pretty cute. And actually, though you didn't ask, in a perfect world where people continue to either subscribe to their daily newspaper, or in which people don't subscribe and the paper, the printed paper, goes away and it's all online, but in a sustainable way that we can actually have reporters. Let me start. What I'm trying to say is that it is an advantage to have both the newspaper and the internet, the PressDemocrat.com, because on something like that, I cannot get that photograph in my column, but I can put it online. And there are a lot of things like that. You can even refer to the website to go see a video. But you put all kinds of things online. And so one thing I try very often to do is, if I'm writing about something and there is more information online, I probably put that website on. But for something like that, yeah, with photographs, it's really nice to be able to refer people that online, they can get more than just in the paper. The great irony, or no, it's not the topic today, but is that the great irony, I wonder if there's ever another business that in the history of mankind that has done this, that newspapers right now, we are catering more and more and more and more to the online reader who gets it free, to the disservice of the subscriber who pays for it. It is so strange. The online people get it quicker. They get more. They get all the photographs. They get little updates to their phones. And it's like at the end of the day, oh, yeah, let's stick it in the newspaper, too. Let's toss them a bone. It's not really that bad. But you can tell I'm kind of an old-fashioned guy, and I think the newspaper, the printed newspaper, is more important. But it is a strange thing that we are serving more and more and more the people who don't pay for the product. It's an odd thing. Yes, ma'am.
Doesn't it mean that newspaper on paper is going to go out?
Well, it's sad. The question was, does it mean that the newspaper, the printed newspaper, is going to go out? I hope not, but, and I, well, let me answer it this way. For several years, our publisher would tell people in public groups, in public forums, well, maybe the printed newspaper has another 8 years, maybe it's got 10 years, maybe more. And there were other people in the building said, stop saying that. It's a downer. It's going to be self-fulfilled prophecy. Don't be telling people that the paper's going to go away. And so now he is saying it's not going to be in the foreseeable future, which is an interesting term. How far is the foreseeable future? But at any rate, it stands to reason. I don't know how to hear it in Oakmont, and this is a stronghold, but I think in most neighborhoods, we've gone to where 80% of the homes have that Press Democrat in their driveway to 40%, something like that. And it is so, I have to admit, it is so inefficient to print newspapers. And the second largest cost, and you probably heard this, the second largest cost for a newspaper, at least our newspaper, is the paper, the newsprint that comes from Canada in rolls that weigh a ton. It's that expensive, and then you're paying the ink, and then you're paying for the ink, and you're paying all this incredible labor to print that thing down at the Rohnert Park facility at night. And then when they start loading it on those trucks, and then the trucks take it to the cars, and the cars deliver it to the homes, those vehicles drive, I believe, 8,000 miles a day. 8,000 miles worth of gasoline and emissions. And yet, you know, we do love that newspaper, but you think, how many people are going to buy an iPad or its a similar before they cancel the paper?
Can I ask you a question?
New York Times. Instead, I just look it up on my computer.
Yeah, it's easier.
And I don't pay anything.
No. It's a reasonable, it's very reasonable. Yes, ma'am.
You've been so successful in promoting human interest. Those stories are wonderful. What is your goal in addressing politics at this point? Why? I mean, most of us are so sated with politics.
Well, that's a good question. And actually, but I think that I would like to be able to be an illuminating force. I would do it if I feel like I'm actually adding something to the dialogue. I'm not just going to say yay, yay, or yeah, he's an idiot. But if I can get something behind the scenes, because, you know, I've been here a long time, and although I do know a lot of people, although a lot of them have changed, you know, I used to know more people on the city council, and now they're newer people, I don't know them as well. But I could use my contacts to bring some truth and light, I think. And that's what I would do if I can. That's what I'm doing. I don't want to just join the fray. But if I can illuminate or offer some context, that's what I'd like to do. A little more of that analytical and behind-the-scenes sort of thing, but definitely not just partisan. Yes?
You certainly hit a nerve with me when you talked about the motorcycle accidents always get in the paper, as well as other accidents. And I wondered, who makes those decisions, and why can't we get public service news in the paper that is really of interest to the local community?
Well, it occurs to me that, just as you're asking the question, that the New York Times doesn't print motorcycle accidents. And I think that maybe we should aspire to that just decide, we're a community newspaper, but just because we're a community paper doesn't mean we have to write every death and every robbery. And I hope that we would go that way. And I think maybe a letter to the editor, if you felt like writing a letter to the editor, is saying there must be, that there, you're aware, you pick up your Monday morning paper, which is very easy to lift. And it's valuable space. And you could ask, is the best thing that we can tell people was about the four people killed last night on Highway 101 and wherever? Isn't there something more valuable? But I guess it's an old habit, for one thing. You know, the police blotter is easy. It's right there. Now, you know, you're supposed to, you know, check and embellish and that. But for a newspaper, a press release from the police and fire beat, it's probably the easiest thing to get at. Like, say, in the morning, well, yeah, the old way of doing business at a newspaper was, when I started the Press Democrat, it was a morning paper. No, it wasn't. It was an afternoon paper. It was an afternoon paper, but the deadlines were in the morning. And so you'd get there at 7:30, 8 o'clock, and start writing furiously, and get the news in the paper, and then by lunch it's time to go drink. But not that I would do that. But now it's all different. The deadline's at the end of the day, but the pressure now is reporters get there about 6 o'clock, and it's to get something on the web because people want something fresh. And here again, it's easiest, but if you look at tomorrow morning, if you go on the PressDemocrat.com at 8 o'clock and see the best read stories, it's probably going to be a fatality, a fire, a robbery, a shooting. And those are the best read stories because those are the only stories on there. And at 6 o'clock in the morning. And so it's expedient. You can get it on. And there is just this notion. And like I say, I'm not, like if there's a, you know, clearly if there's a, I don't mean to minimize violent crime, and if something happens in your neighborhood, you want to know about it. But I do think we could de-emphasize it, and not only that, but to replace it with more meaningful news. Because I think some newspapers have, but it has to be a lot, it must be a logical decision. You know, it must be some editor saying, hey, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of all this. Let's get, bring me something with more substance. To me, even if it's that there's a meeting tomorrow of the Park Commission at 3 o'clock, I think that's more valuable. At least you know, you could go if you want. It's just a public meeting. But I think there's more value in that than the guy who, you know, drove into a tree. Yes, ma'am.
This isn't your area of expertise, but one thing that really sets me off about the Press Democrat is that now if your paper isn't there in the morning, you call, you get somebody in the Philippines, and they tell you you'll get your paper tomorrow.
Right. No, and I it's a horrible thing.
Come back and bring it.
That's it. Well, it's a cutback. In the recent, in about the last 3 or 4 years, the Press Democrat has lost, has shed almost half of its employees throughout the building. And I think it's a terrible, terrible thing. And the publisher doesn't like it because, of course, why don't we give them one more reason to cancel their subscription? You know, when we miss them, we don't bring them another paper that day. Because obviously you have to pay that guy or, to go take him a paper. But there again, I would, he did say that he hopes to restore that. He told us at a public at an employees meeting that he hopes to restore the delivery of missed papers, the same day delivery of missed papers, and it's a cost cutting, and I would encourage you to call the publisher's office or write a letter and tell them that it's important to you. One, we shouldn't be missing papers, but sometimes people steal papers. And I did the story out of a retirement community in Sonoma where the papers kept getting missed, and they finally discovered that raccoons were using them for nesting. And then, because the... No, it's very important, and that should. And it's yet, you know, corporate America today, it's yet another service that has been slashed to try to keep the bottom line from sinking even lower. Yes?
Chris, I, too, am not a brain surgeon, but I would like to thank you for the article you wrote about the ladies who are making these hats.
Oh, thank you.
The right after that article, 10 huge plastic bags of yarn showed up at Welfare League.
Well, that's fantastic. That's very gratifying to me, and it's really, it's not an ego thing. It's just, hey, it's bringing these connections to people. Somebody's got yarn, and they read that these wonderful ladies, some of them are making a cap a day for preemies and low-income kids and people across the across the world. I don't know. It just, it's a simple thing just to kind of help make those connections. So thank you. Yes?
Chris, you know, I had my hand up 7 times, and you didn't call on me. Now I forgot what I was talking about.
Well, I'm going to answer you anyway. I'm going to say yes, and thank you for bringing it up. Oh, here in the yes.
Chris, do you try to answer every email that you get?
I do. That's another resolution.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
You mentioned your facility in Roanoke Park.
Yes.
And it reminded me that every summer when we drive past there going to Costco or wherever, I think when we're trying to save water, tell me, please, they use recycled water on that vast lawn?
Well, I don't think they were using recycled water, so they that sign indicates that they stopped watering it altogether.
Oh,
it is green now. Yeah. It's green about half a year. And that was a nice, actually, they had some wonderful ideas for that vast lawn. And one was to invite landscapers to come and put an example of a low water, and you come and see them. When we, you know, I'm going to ask them what happened. I know what happened to it. somebody decided it would cost money, and there'd probably be liability. But just imagine you can come see a demonstration garden for what you might do in your front yard for a low maintenance and low water. I was there one day, one of the funniest thing, you know, the Press Democrat is now, since you're all subscribers, you don't know that if you're a non-subscriber, we are once again punishing you by throwing this free thing. And that, years ago that happened, we had that, and then that product went away. And we were having a meeting there at that Roner Park facility one day, and here a guy drives up, gets out, opens his door, takes like a week's worth of those papers, those free papers, throws them on the Press Democrat's lawn, and drove off.
Chris, I'm Nancy Young, and I'd like to thank you. About 2 years ago, you did a special on a mailman who was retiring here in Oakmont.
Yeah. Yeah.
His name was Terry, and he had been our mailman for 18 years. And so there was a lot of community interest, and Judd helped plan the party. And you were nice enough not only to write about it, but to come out.
I remember.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. And as I recall, there was free food there. So. But I love that kind of story. You know, you should not have to commit a crime or die to get your name in the Press Democrat.
Write a letter.
You can write a letter, yep.
Hi, Chris.
Hi.
My name is Fritzy. I used to work at Bank of America when you first came into
yep.
town.
How are you?
I wanted to say thank you.
Oh, it's on.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
I have a loud voice. I'm surprised. I just want to say thank you very much for all of the years of the articles you've written. Your personality is still the same. You can give people laughs
thank
with
you.
It. And I read anything you ever write.
Well, thank you.
I want to say thank you, and it's been a pleasure knowing you.
Well, gosh, thank you very much. It's been...
Chris, they just gave me the microphone back, and I still don't remember.
Well, I've loved working there. You know, I am shooting for 40 years, which would be about another... I've been there 30... How many years have I been there? 78 was what I hired. So 31 years?
34.
I think I can... I am hoping that the Press Democrat will outlive me. But I do, you know, I do really appreciate that the Press Democrat dedicates that space for a column like this. I just think to get up in the morning and it's nothing. I mean, all of the news is important, but particularly like on the worst days at the Press Democrat, and it happens some days, on the worst days at the Press Democrat, in my mind, B1, the local page, is three acts of violence and two advances for tomorrow's city council and supervisor meeting. There's not a whole lot there. And so I think that there just is more to a community than what we can get from City Hall and from the police department. So.
Forward to reading the Press Democrat on Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday because of your column. It's reminiscent of Herb Cain in San Francisco. So thank you. And the human interest is what we enjoy.
Thank you. Well, I won't change. Thank you very much. Very much. I need to go back and read more of his stuff, because I have no problem with just emulating and copying him.
Okay, I'm going to thank you, Chris, for coming. One comment: I don't know how you go around saying you work there when you have so much fun.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.